This interview with Joanne Lampman is being recorded on April 20th, 1982.
The first area I wanted to talk about, I wanted to have you talk about, was just a little about your childhood and your home life and the school that you went to and your family, and just to give a background and put things in context a little bit.
Well, you probably haven't met many people who are Madison people, have you? I was actually born in Madison, and I have met not all that many people that have been in the university situation. And I was the daughter of a university, or of a YMCA secretary. My dad was the first the physical director of this downtown Y, and then the general secretary, which is the top man. And we moved from Adam Street, where my father built his first house, out here in Nacoma. As a matter of fact, just one block over. And so when Bob and I moved back here, we sort of knew where we wanted to live. Or, you know, we at least knew the city and parts of the city. And I was one of three kids, the youngest. And my mother is a very smart gal. And I guess if people had been working in her day, she would have gotten money for what she did, which was a lot of religious education kinds of work. And she was just a very involved churchwoman in those days and has been since. So our life was sort of on all sides influenced by the YMCA and the Presbyterian Church. I suppose that molded us in a lot of our attitudes that we had about kind of people we would be, and kind of people we would marry, even. You know.
Uh-huh. Did you have ideas as a girl about the sort of person, what the person you married would do, and so forth, what their life would be like?
Not in the least. I never thought about it. I can't remember thinking about it until I got to the university. I was just a very active and high school kid, went to West College, and liked what I was doing and enjoyed high school. And I hear nowadays kids don't enjoy high school, for instance. I thought it was just a lot of fun and was a good student. And I guess I never thought much about marriage at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And or about the kind of guy I wanted to
marry.
But then at the university, lo and behold, I met Bob the very first year. And I was, knowing my background now, you'd know I'd go over to that press house. That's where I sort of made my home, as did a lot of people that I came to know and like, and also Bob Lemon was there. And Doc Lauer, who was the minister at that time, had said to Bob, I want you to meet a young girl I know. And he brought him over and introduced me to Bob. And I guess At that point, I did start thinking about the kind of guy I'd like to marry.
Mm-hmm.
But he had no idea about being a professor at that time. He was a senior. And he thought more of seminary.
So he was quite oriented towards religion.
Yes, yeah, he came from a very strong Methodist background out in the middle of the state, where Stevens Point, Clover to be exact.
That's where they raise potatoes.
That's exactly where they raise potatoes. And his father was a high school teacher and principal. And, but the background was generally farming, as a lot of our parents and grandparents were. And I think that he also, as I recall, he thought he would be, well, he thought strongly about law. He had taken a minor in law and a major in econ. And at that point, of course, the world was, you know. And it turned out he didn't have choices to think about anything. The only choice he had was, shall we get married or shan't we get married?
Mm.
And as I maybe, you recall my saying to you up at the Elvium that day, I think maybe if there hadn't been a war, we undoubtedly wouldn't have gotten married.
Mm.
Because, his sights were going on to graduate school or law school, and I certainly would have finished college, which I still have a year to do.
Mm.
And so I'm not one of your highly educated, at least formally highly educated faculties.
Mm.
But I suppose if I had stopped to add up all the courses I had taken since or applied them, I would have long ago graduated. But
you've just more pursued areas that you were interested in rather than formally trying to complete a degree. That makes more sense when you're around. Just move this around a little bit because this is making noise. Put this down on the floor. As you were growing up in Madison, were your family friends with a number of people from the university, or did you have a different circle?
Well, actually, my parents.
Yeah.
Friends. Well, I would say my parents' friends generally have been within their own YMCA and church-related kinds of activities. But our next door neighbor were the Elvians.
Oh.
And used to babysit the Elvian kids, isn't it? And the mother and Connie Elvium are still quite close. I mean, when they see each other, they have lots to talk about still. They always had an interesting talk. But I knew kids of faculty at West High.
Mm.
And I guess I wasn't always, as kids aren't always, terribly aware of what people's, of friends' parents did. But there always was a certain amount of talk, but I never associated necessarily with the idea that I would like to be a faculty wife or marry a professor.
Mm-hmm.
I just never thought along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I suppose people do.
I did.
Did you really?
When I was a child. Yeah.
Really?
A little bit.
You mean to say that marriage was really sort of uppermost in your mind, even though you're a lot younger than I was? I wasn't thinking about
it. No, I didn't think a lot about it, but I sort of had some ideas about
it. I guess my folks... tack actually was that you marry someone not necessarily within the church, but you don't marry out of your kind, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
That there are enough problems, they thought, in marriages without marrying a Greek.
Mm-hmm.
or a Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Jew.
Mm-hmm. And did you?
And they weren't prejudiced necessarily. I mean, that wasn't part of it. It's just that they thought that life would certainly have fewer stresses if you married your own kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they put it just that way, because that does sound almost bigoted. But they weren't. They strictly weren't.
Mm-hmm.
That. And I feel very fortunate about the attitudes that my folks did pass on to us. I think that they did it. A good job of family raising, and you can only assess those things, it seems to me, as you look back. And mother was very instrumental in, for instance, in organizing dancing classes for us. There wasn't anything like that in the town at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, it seemed to me she had very sort of forward-looking ideas about young people in general, and about sex and how it should be instructed within the home and the church.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing was done in schools in those days. And I don't know how much is being done now, actually. But anyway, I think that they did give the three of us a very sound view of that aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
What they didn't give us, I feel, and I and even a bit resentful about it, I guess, is good conversation about the world.
Mm.
So that when I got to college, the things that people talked about was, was ever so enlightening and broadening. They really didn't, I don't have the kind of memory about these things, for instance, that my sister has. She seems to be able to have a facility for that kind of memory, but I don't so it wasn't so big in our family life that I remember us having good discussions about about the war even. And they were very Republican. I do remember my father started talking about that man, you know, Roosevelt.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't know when I began to turn away from that. It could have been after I met Bob, who came from a very different...
What's his background?
It was progressive.
More liberal? Oh, it was progressive.
Progressives, yeah. And then Democrat.
As a more rural, coming from a more rural
I suppose,
area, I guess
yeah,
that would be
I suppose.
A logical...
Yeah, and my folks were sort of... my father's, or my mother's father was a very Republican. So, I mean, she came by it naturally. They were both college educated. They both graduated from Northwestern. And,
When you got to UW, what did you major in?
Well, I was just a freshman when I met Bob, of course, and everything sort of after that was sort of down the hole. But I was an English major.
Uh-huh.
I was in just a liberal arts bent type.
And when did you marry? At the end of your freshman year?
No, actually at the end of my sophomore year. I had 2 years here. And then Bob had gone on into the Navy and had his cadet training and had just absolutely put the thought of further education out of his mind. I mean, who could think about anything but the war in those years? I mean, he was just stuck.
Yeah.
And I guess there weren't, I didn't know anybody, and I guess he didn't either, who protested. I mean, there wasn't the kind of activity you had.
No.
As we had.
No.
This later time. So, he came after his cadet training, came back to Madison, and we were married in the Presbyterian Church, proper fashion. Mrs. Elvium arranging the flowers, and friends of my mother doing the calling of the invitations, because he came back on a leave, you know, all of a sudden he could come, and suddenly all our friends got on the on the telephone, and we had a full, proper ceremony, and my sister had been married just 3 weeks before.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That had been planned, mind you, hers. And
so I
wore her wedding
pilot.
Dress. Yeah, I wore her wedding dress, and my the kids. We picked the friends who could fit into the same bridesmaids' dresses.
So when he finished with his military service,
let's see, well, we had been in Florida. He was down there then, by then, doing a teaching stint of navigation. He was a navigator in the Navy Air. He decided to, this was in 46.
I didn't want to just jump over that whole period. Maybe you could just talk about after you were married, where
you
went then.
Well, yeah, he was based first in San Diego and then up in Seattle. He was to fly to the Aleutian Islands and be based up there. And but actually, he was based in Seattle, and he flew out of Seattle into the Aleutian Islands and so on. But because we were so newly married, we decided that I would try to find a school out on the West Coast, preferably a smaller school, as near Seattle as possible. I guess I didn't consider going to the University of Washington. I don't quite know why at the time, and I can't recall why I made the decision to go to Reed College. Because I didn't know a soul there. I didn't know anybody in Portland. I just knew Reed was a good school, and it was small, and I could probably get in.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I could nowadays. It's kind of a classy, intellectual school. But at that time, of course, there weren't many men around, and they were probably taking anybody they could get. Anyway, they did welcome me. And so I had another year there.
So did you live on campus?
I lived on campus. Uh-huh. Most people lived on campus. There were very few city people there. Mm-hmm. And I made some good friends that I still keep up with.
That's nice.
There, yeah, mm-hmm. there.
And it wouldn't necessarily have happened.
That's right.
With only a year.
Yeah. And I took interesting courses and I met interesting professors. In fact, one of my professors I kept up with until he died in Seattle just a bit ago, and I still correspond with his 99-year-old widow. Yeah, in a nursing home there. And Anyway, I have kept up with some of the Reed College people. I don't know too much about what's happening at Reed itself these days, but I keep up with those particular people.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob would, on his, when he'd get back into Seattle, I would fly up from Portland, and we'd have a day or two at the Meany Hotel there near the university. Do you know the Meany Hotel?
No.
Every room a corner room? And it was just sort of always little bits of honeymoons that we would have when he would come back. But anyway, at the end of that school year, as it turned out, he came back just at good time, and we flew down to where we drove to Florida actually, and he was at the Banana River Naval Air Station, which is now Cape Kennedy, and our first son was born down there,
mm-hmm.
And I was pregnant with a second when the war ended, and we put all our little belongings in a car and drove to Madison, Wisconsin. And he registered as a graduate student in economics.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived, mind you. I mean, so much of our early life, really, I wasn't a faculty wife, and he wasn't on the faculty. Mm. We married very young. I was like almost 20, and he was 23.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't thinking about being a faculty wife at that time, and he wasn't thinking about being necessarily a faculty.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he could have gone in several different directions. He could have been an economist with a bank or a corporation or whatever. And anyway, we lived out there at Badger Village. Have you ever heard of anybody living out of Badger Village?
I've heard of it.
Now, that was rough living. Kids these days that live there at Eagle Heights don't know what it's about. I mean, we had a coal stove, for instance,
really?
In the middle of our living room, and my first son burnt his arm learning to walk, sort of out there. And
It wasn't Quonset huts, was it?
No, they were row houses, or they were duplexes. Let me see. I've even sort of forgotten. I think they were sort of duplexes, but lots of them. And on that flat there, where the ammunition plant is, it was just a giant.
This was at Baraboo?
Yeah.
Right.
Isn't that Baraboo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right
there before you get to the hills.
Right.
But, I mean, it was on that plant where the mm-hmm. ammunition plant was. I think that plant is still there.
Still is?
Yeah. And there may be a few buildings on the other side of the street, which is where we all live. But it was, and then the guys had to take a bus in every day, 30 miles.
Were you able to, I suppose there were lots of young parents. Did you make friends there?
Well, nobody I've kept up with, although the Heffernans were there. We did know them. Justice Heffern, mm-hmm. you know, Ned Heffern. And I guess I've heard a lot of people since who were there. We were there and stayed just a year, and then we bought a little house here near Shorewood on Burbank Place, right near JoJo's now. Yeah. And we lived there a year after our second child was born.
So life in Badger Village was sounds as though it might have been a little depressing.
It was depressing, and it was rough, and we had no money to speak of. Well, I shouldn't say that, because he still had Navy money. Maybe we were richer then than we were for the next 10 years. I don't know. Well, we always managed to get along, but it was such a grim little place that I guess, and we didn't attempt to do a lot of fixing up and stuff. We had, I was terribly busy with being pregnant with a second and having a boy a year old.
Sure.
I mean, we had two just 13 months apart.
Oh, my.
So I was too busy to think about anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember doing a lot of reading at that time or anything.
It's a holding operation. Strictly a holding operation.
It's strictly a holding operation.
Yeah.
Right. I just, I found, I guess I didn't complain about it. I think women nowadays might really object to something like
mm-hmm.
that. I mean, they would really feel resentful. I don't remember having any of those feelings.
Mm-hmm.
We were very in love and very happy with one another.
Mm-hmm.
And we were happy to see these kids coming along. And I guess there was money to feed and clothe them
GI Bill? Was he
yes,
coming under the GI
exactly.
Bill?
So there was some. I don't recall what that amount, those amounts were. Of course, it went a long way by comparison to today.
So he was a full-time student, and, mm-hmm. and and you were just mm-hmm. kind of being a mother, and that was it.
That was it. And you didn't have long-term goals. Yeah. I didn't. He perhaps did. Uh-huh. But, I mean, getting through this day was goal enough in those days, really.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't think I was a very good mother. I wasn't really, a housewife kind of a mother. I wasn't really prepared in any particular way. Mm-hmm. I guess. The only thing I was ever, aside from helping Mother dust and bake cookies, she wasn't a very good, great housekeeper herself, mm-hmm. and she didn't like to do a lot of things.
Did you have people at your house who would come in and do that?
Well, at some point we did. I think it was more like when we got on into the junior high years. Mm-hmm. Mother did have a lady come and help her do mm-hmm. things, but up until that time, I remember my sister always had the job of ironing shirts. She got a nickel shirt.
Mm.
And I didn't like the iron, but I did like the kitchen, and I've always liked the kitchen, and I have I did all the cookie baking.
Mm.
I have recipes from way back, and I did like that aspect of it.
So that was probably one thing you did when your kids were little, was you probably plunged into cooking and enjoyed it.
Oh, yes, and I do that with my grandchildren. When they come, we always spend a lot of time baking cookies and working in the kitchen. And, mm-hmm.
It's a nice...
The boys as well as the girls. It isn't uh-huh. necessarily any kind of a sexist thing with
yeah.
me. I just... They look forward to coming here because Grandma likes to cook, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I involve them generally in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's nice to be able to do it and feel comfortable mm-hmm. with people in the kitchen.
And I don't let the mess of it particularly bother me.
Mm.
I've gotten to be a lot neater than I used to be. As a matter of fact, I know this is jumping the gun just a bit on the story, but when we had three little kids, we lived in another hovel situation. And when you have three kids, there's always somebody sick, right? Or there's mess, always. And we entertained one of Bob's students. He was a nice young man from Spokane. And his girl was coming over. And as was our want, we said, well, come on out and have supper with us. You know, bring her out and have supper. And the next thing I knew was we were bending over helping our kids out front do something. In fact, it was our son's fifth birthday, and we were involved putting a bike together. And down this long walk, we heard heels clicking. And I don't think I had a pair of high heels in those days, but this lady came clicking down our way, and they were both dressed to the teeth. And we had the kind of living room, the whole house couldn't have been any bigger than from, you know, this to there. And we had, you know, the twin bed thing that was the couch
mm-hmm.
in the living room
mm-hmm.
where you had to, you know, put 1,000 pillows in the back so that you could, your legs wouldn't be up on the bed. Anyway, it was a very awkward situation. It turned out that later it was told to me that she had said, if this is what being a professor's wife is, I don't want any part. That came to me many, many years later, and actually it's someone whose name you would know, so she shall remain nameless.
Oh, no.
But I remember that startled me and did get me thinking about the kind of rough life we did lead. And I don't know that it was any any different than any young faculty wife with or faculty family with three kids would find it today, but possibly I see an awful lot of young people today with ever so much more money than we had.
Mm-hmm.
At doing, you know, buying houses here in Nakoma or Shorewood.
Mm-hmm.
They're young people. I don't know whether they inherited it or what. But my folks didn't have any money, and Bob's folks certainly didn't have any money. And whatever we had, Bob earned. And it was never a very high pay scale in
mm-hmm.
those days.
When did he get his first faculty appointment?
That was in 1948.
48. Uh-huh, so he would have finished his thesis.
Yeah, he actually, we went out to University of California at Berkeley for the final year before his PhD. But he actually got it from the University of Wisconsin. He was out there doing a thesis on the Sailors Union.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so we lived out there, and the job, the first job, actually the first offer came from Ames, Iowa, mind you, and he was going to accept that because there wasn't anything else at that moment. In fact, the jobs were sort of tight, and all the graduate students in that particular class of POBs out there said that they would never leave the Bay Area. I mean, everybody was so wild about that mm-hmm. place, you know, mm-hmm. that they said they would never leave the Bay Area. I think now that there may be two of that bunch who stayed, and everybody else really? Had to eat. Right. But then the job came from the University of Washington, and that intrigued us ever so much more. We sort of wanted to stay in the Northwest if we could, or on the West Coast if we could. And that intrigued us, so he wrote to Ames and said that he was taking his other job. And we moved up there when our daughter, who was born at Berkeley, was, 6 months old or something.
Mm.
And we moved into the Union Bay Village, it was called. It was the housing that would be comparable to Eagle Heights, actually. Well, no, it wouldn't be Eagle
University
Heights, it would
houses.
Be university houses, yeah. But bears no resemblance to what you see up here.
Mm-hmm.
They were also duplexes set in large courts.
Mm-hmm.
There would be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 duplexes in each court. And a lot of those people we have kept up with. That was a very warm and wonderful time for us. And we knew very few people who could afford to buy houses at that time. I think one of our friends did move out and buy a house, and I suspect that their fathers gave them the money to do that, because there wasn't that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
I think our salary was like $400 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And of course it went a lot farther, mind you.
It's
hard to compare, but we thought we were pretty rich.
Mm-hmm.
But never quite rich enough to buy a house. And so so we didn't. We
mm-hmm.
rented.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, was your life rather informal? It sounds as though it was pretty
rather informal. That's got to be in the understatement department. I can't think of anything formal we did. We did go to church in those years, and we did meet some people. We went to the University Congregational Church out there, and actually turned out to be a very big thing in our children's lives as well as ours. It was the one place where we did meet some non-university people and also a lot of university people. But we did things in those years that we look back on with great affection. And it turns out now that our daughter has just had her two children baptized there, and our son came down from British Columbia, and he had his three children baptized
really?
There.
So that was just a very important place.
Yeah,
for
and it wasn't, and our children are not really terribly church-oriented, and we are not particularly either, but we did teach Sunday school in those years, and there was a very fine church program, Sunday school kind of a thing out there. And it was called Character School.
Hmm.
It was run by a Dr. Ligon from Schenectady in New York. And it was,
it sounds very New England-y.
Yeah, it was. And it was a program that has since died out. It's not there now, but we thought that was just a wonderful way to teach religion to kids. And you didn't read the Bible as such, but everything sort of...
It was more ethics.
Yeah, it was ethics, right. And in fact, we have a good laugh about our oldest son. He is... to this day extremely persistent. And we said he always had too many units in persistence in character school. And they were sort of divided up in units like that, you know. But anyway, they were all very fond of that church, and so two of them had and those children are young, they hadn't really thought about baptizing their children at what would be called the usual ages of baptism, but somehow they've come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was big. But the university housing itself was those Union Bay Village houses have just been torn down within the year.
Really?
And rather nice places put up.
Mm-hmm.
but they were an eyesore, what was considered an eyesore in a very fancy district, probably comparable to Shorewood. And the people that had to ride by Union Bay Village on their way home every day to this fancy, just thought it was a terrible blight on the community. And perhaps it was.
But it sounds like kind of a fun place to be.
It was, in the same way that University Houses and Eagle Heights is. We just met all kinds of people from all, not just, I mean, very few from economics, but we still keep up with those people.
Has that influenced, this makes it sound very formal, but the sort of the pattern of making friends, do you think? Do you think because of that experience you might have a different group of friends now, or more varied group of friends than you might
otherwise? Well, possibly. I wouldn't be able to exactly document that. The fact of the matter is we came back to my hometown, and I think that probably was more instrumental in the breadth of our friendships at this point. Because I did, there were just an awful lot of people from that I knew from high school who perhaps I hadn't kept up with in the intervening years, but I had established contact.
So you had a wonderful basis.
Oh, I had and Bob enjoys all those people. He loves getting away from the university people.
And those people tend to be in business?
Some, yeah. Mm-hmm. Some, and in music, and the wife of a professor influenced me to the extent that I felt I needed to be a faculty wife, with quotes. I just have never really participated in the organization. I've always sent in my dues because I'm told that that is helpful to scholarships and so on. And the only other thing that we did, and we did it as a couple, and not necessarily as a faculty wife, was the Friends of Foreign Students. Mm-hmm. And that interest came about because we did a lot of traveling and met people abroad, and many of them came here, and we performed that duty of being hosts and hostesses. Mm-hmm.
So that has been an interest that's continued.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of a commitment.
Yes, right.
That you felt.
Now, we haven't been doing that particular thing for a number of years, but this year we had have an Australian daughter, and we did go to the picnic and so on. But I've never participated in the organizational part of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about a slightly related area, and that is, have you at various times helped your husband with the matter of writing books or articles?
Never.
Done any of that?
No. I'm really not basically interested in economics. Mm-hmm. He might ask me about a word or so, about a choice of words. I've always enjoyed words. Mm-hmm. I'm not particularly articulate, but if I had a good dictionary or thesaurus, and I can do that kind of digging and thinking with mm-hmm. him or for him even, but I don't know. I don't edit for him, and I don't read his things necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly bedtime reading.
No. And typing?
And I type miserably. Fortunately. Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure I would have done that even if I were a good typer. Mm. I really I guess I always had enough to do, and he's never imposed that kind of thing on me. Mm-hmm. And if I had done it willingly, it wouldn't have been an imposition, of course, but I mean, he didn't say ever, wouldn't you take a typing course so that you could help me do some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Actually, the typing pool at the economics department has always been adequate. He has never had any problem getting things done. Mm-hmm. So he's never sort of overwhelmed me with his mm-hmm. his work.
How about to what extent has there been sort of a departmental social life and events that mm-hmm. were sort of that you had to attend and dinner parties within the department and so forth?
Well, I guess I never felt that I had to do any of that. In the earlier days, now we came here in 58, the department was ever so much smaller, and I can't tell you exactly what it was, but it's certainly tripled that now. I think it always was a big department, but it wasn't overwhelming in those days. Nowadays, no one pretends that they can entertain the economics department all at once.
Really?
Oh! Mm-hmm. What have they got to be? They've got to be 60 people in it?
Yeah. Or is there a sort of Are there annual cocktail parties and things like that?
I think there has been an attempt over the years for the chairman to do something early on. Mm. The current chairman now has done brunches, and he has them at the university club. He doesn't do them at his home.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Now, there was one chairman's wife who it was a second marriage, and she came from the medical school tradition, which is ever so much more elegant, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
And this was Betty Early. And she always managed to do an elegant cocktail party, and it always seemed to be a terrible expense.
Mm.
And somehow they carried it off. I didn't know where the money came from, but when Bob was chairman, I assure you, we didn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, we just didn't. We couldn't afford to do that.
Yeah.
There have been Christmas parties, especially, and I'm talking about now in the 60s, early 60s, where attempts were made to have a Christmas party and everybody brought their own bottles.
Mm.
But there have been very few sort of formal whole department things where people were expected to come.
How about, in history there are little sort of subgroups that are called caucuses, sort of interest,
yeah.
They have to do with areas the professors teach
right.
in,
uh-huh.
like there's an American caucus.
Is
there any kind of subgroup like that where people would see one another more frequently because they'd be on the same committees and that kind of thing?
As couples, now you're talking about.
Well, no, I mean
the men
seeing one another more often, and as a result, perhaps
I suppose
the
couples
would see something more of one another.
I suppose that does happen. I'm not so aware of it, actually. What does tend to happen, because it is such a large department, is if there's a visiting fireman, the fellow whose department, whose area the guy's coming in will attempt to arrange it. Well, he'll have a seminar, and then maybe they will get some of the people who are interested in the subject, and their wives possibly,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily, to go out for dinner,
mm-hmm.
or to have a drink at the house. But and I guess we've done that over the years, but we don't, and it's sort of an open invitation. Anybody in the department could come.
Mm-hmm.
Bob never ever bothered to bring home all those invitations, and somebody said, I didn't see you at so-and-so's. And I said, well, I've got one of those absent-minded professors. He either decided that he didn't want to do it, and I was never for much doing that,
mm-hmm.
but partly because we had kids at home at cocktail-type times.
Sure.
And so maybe that sort of thing happened at the age I am now, I mean, where you could get out.
Mm.
And we always hated to invite somebody who had to get a babysitter, mm-hmm. to come and have a drink and spend money to go out for dinner. I mean, wow. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what I would call an imposition.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we did refuse things like that. And I guess and I have to think back, because the one thing we did feel we had to do early on, see, I'm tending to look at how things are now, but when we came, and Bob came to help Professor Witte, first of all, he came for a year before we actually came here because he needed help. He was the chairman, and things were overwhelming him. He was getting near retirement. So we did come for a year that year, and then the next year we came permanently, but Mrs. Perlman, did have these sort of events where you were expected to come. And Mrs. Witte did this to me once, too. She called and said, so-and-so, Professor so-and-so from Princeton is coming, and I want you and Bob to come to dinner.
Mm.
Or we're taking you out, I guess is what she had said. And I said, well, we did have another engagement. Well, I know Edwin won't hear of it. And so I did something I would never, ever do again. And I called my hostess, and I said we had had this invitation, and she would not hear of our not coming.
Mm.
And I broke that engagement. I would never do that now. And I think it was not looked upon kindly, as I can understand at this point. But I was sort of caught between being sort of... I mean, Bob was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
and we were sort of on deck. But that was early on, and Professor Whitty and Professor Pullman were old-time faculty.
So that was almost a pattern from another generation.
Yes, that was
generation.
Very much so, and I can remember Mrs. Pullman had high teas.
Really?
And we were all invited. Kids, too.
Yes. Oh, I must have loved that.
That was strenuous. And she did like to do it very properly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gee.
Uh-huh. And, but as I recall, we were only invited once to do that. Do you suppose it was because we had three kids?
Ordered all the sandwiches.
Yes, it was very proper. And they were very good to us as young faculty, however, and very kind, generally.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we have our affection is mostly with Professor Whitty and his wife, and then Harold Groves was of that era too. I don't know if you even know that name. He was in public finance, and he had a million PhD students, and they all came back at his retirement, and they had a wonderful seminar. And Bob keeps up with a lot of those people,
mm-hmm.
that were more or less the same era as he.
You mentioned that over the years you've taken quite a few courses.
Yes.
How did you just, what areas did they tend to be in?
Well, mostly art history. And I guess I've done a lot of things over the years. Part of them stemmed early on from just being frantic to get out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember at the University of Washington, for instance, Bob would rush home at 5 o'clock or something, and we would push dinner down everybody's throat so that I could go off to a woodworking course,
mm-hmm.
at the Seattle Technical School. And I don't know why I picked woodworking. Honestly, I don't know to this day why I did that. I still have things that I've made,
mm-hmm.
that we use, mostly upstairs out of the way,
mm-hmm.
but they were not bad. But I was desperate in those years to get out of the house and to do something entirely different. And I would go to this technical school where the saws would be so loud they would blast your brains out. And yet it was just like music.
Uh-huh.
Just like music to me, and the smell of the wood and all that I found very relaxing after,
mm-hmm.
a day with the kids.
Oh, sure.
And the other thing I did in those early years was Legal and Voters.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, of course, in the evening. I have belonged to an evening group so that I could just arrange it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so in a way that established, I also established patterns for me, but I also sang at the university in those years in a choral group.
This is still at Washington.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I didn't do singing when I got back here. I got out my violin, though, and I started playing violin again. I had always taken, my folks were very conscientious about finding the money, I should say, to give us all music education.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't in the schools in those years, so you had to do it on your own. And we all had piano. And then when instruments did come into the schools, I was in the 8th grade here in the Nakoma School, and I picked out the violin at that point, and I've kept it up ever since. It's only within the last 5 or 6 years that I've given it up. Due to arthritis.
Mm.
And I sold my violin.
Oh, my.
I may be sorry about that. I still have one violin that my first violin, my daughter took up, and will eventually get into it again, too, I guess, when her family is of a decent age. But it isn't something, music like that on an instrument isn't something that you just pick up and do once a week. A violin has to be practiced every day.
Mm-hmm.
There's just no getting around it.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually that sort of went by the boards too, although I did play with the community orchestra at the vocational school.
Mm-hmm. So you were practicing, you had to practice.
Yes, yeah. I kept that up pretty regularly. In fact, I can remember Bob often had his classes out here, his public finance classes, a night class it was, and he had one of the regents as a student at one point.
Oh, really?
And I'll never forget, I said, well, Bob, if you have it on Tuesdays, that's okay. But I have community artist of that night, and I'll lay out the cookies, whatever they were having. I don't know what it was, even. But you'll have to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember coming down the stairs with my violin under my arm, this room full of students. And the regent approached Bob afterwards and said, "Well, what is it your wife does? You know, why isn't she here?" And he said, "Well, he's always thought it was good that I wanted to do that." Now, he really wasn't being critical. The regent wasn't. But he was interested that I would depart as soon as the company, so to speak, arrived.
Yeah.
But that was something I did, and Bob's always been extremely supportive of anything I want to do. If I had wanted to work or take a job, he would have turned handsprings to make it possible for me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've never felt constrained in this way at all, like I think perhaps some wives do, that their husbands really don't want them working. And I guess I just felt that was always an option I had, if I had in fact wanted to. But the truth of the matter is, our family kept us so busy. It kept me so busy, as anybody with four kids is bound to be. And I guess I felt that was the number one job.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. We did do entertaining students all those years. We haven't done so much in the last couple of years, but we do it. Mm-hmm. I find that enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing I dislike about that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel it's something I have to do, partly, I suppose that's it. If Bob said, "Well, you know, this month we have to entertain three groups of students or something, or I want all my TAs over for dinner," but it's something we've always consulted about.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of come to agreements about.
Mm-hmm.
Been very easy. It's been a nice life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't find anything onerous about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
Yeah.
Do you want me just to ramble this way, really?
Hmm?
Do you want me to ramble this way?
Yeah, that's exactly. That's fine. Yeah. We've actually covered just about all the bases.
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest pluses, however, if I can talk about a real plus about being a real advantage for me, has been the travel aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Bob always knew I liked to travel, so maybe we went out of our way to do some things that he wouldn't necessarily have done, because I think in his work up in poverty and income transfer, that kind of stuff, probably the best places for him to be are Washington, D.C. and places within the country.
Mm-hmm.
But there have always been opportunities. He's always been asked a lot to go abroad and do whatever stint he could do in other countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so at whatever stage we were at with our family, we decided it was a good stage, for instance, to pick up and go, and we've done that.
Mm-hmm. Where have you lived?
Well, we've lived in Beirut,
mm-hmm.
Back in the 50s, early 50s, and we've lived in the Philippines, in Indonesia, in Germany, and in Australia. Not full years always, but chunks of time. We lived a full year in the Philippines and a full year in Beirut. But the others were shorter, 3 months.
Mm-hmm. And did you find those times to be rewarding?
Very rewarding. Uh-huh. When young people thinking about traveling, and I've got nieces as well who have thought about traveling in foreign countries and taking families, I always say, make sure that your marriage is good and strong before you go, because there are so many frustrations in living abroad that if you aren't a good, strong family with a good marriage, I've seen more marriages break up overseas
mm-hmm.
than you can shake a stick at. There are just a million frustrations. And I think, you know, young people tend to go over and think, well, I can't stand it here anymore. I'm going to go over there and we're going to start a new life and
mm-hmm.
this and that and the other thing. And you go over there and it's a very hard way to live. I mean, if you're living on sort of a professor's salary, you don't have a chauffeur coming to get you every day and tend to all your needs. It's the field, as they say, so it's a very hard,
mm-hmm.
it's a hard life.
Were there American schools that your kids went to? How did it work?
Well, in Beirut, our kids were very young. Two of the kids did go to school there, but it was an American school. It was the American University of Beirut is
mm-hmm.
where it was, and this school was in conjunction with it.
Mm-hmm.
In the Philippines, Tom was only in the fourth grade, and oh, they had so many construction problems, that the American school was sufficiently far off from where the university was in Quezon City that we decided not to send it to the American school. As it turned out, we went to what was called their lab school at the campus, and he was maybe one of two American kids there, mm-hmm. and it was extremely hard on him. I think we probably did make a mistake mm-hmm. in not sending him to the American school. It was a miserable year for him.
Mm-hmm.
He became sort of a solitary kid and did a lot of reading at home.
Mm-hmm.
He loved to read, but the English was supposedly spoken in this lab school
mm-hmm.
at the university, but it was spoken badly.
Mm.
And on the playground, it wasn't spoken at all.
Oh, okay.
So that he was really, he suffered.
Mm-hmm.
He really truly did suffer. And he looks back on that now, and he can talk about it now, of course. And he said that really was a rough year. But he can, at this stage, sort out some of the good things about it, too. And he does remember a lot of things from my year in the Philippines that he doesn't regret.
Mm-hmm.
And in Indonesia, that was such a culturally rich place that he learned just lots of things that he could never learn anywhere else. He would love to go back there,
mm-hmm.
if just to see the dance,
mm-hmm.
and so on. So it's been the travel has been a very enriching time. The oldest boy really didn't get his share of it. I think he was sort of he was in Beirut. Was the only place he was.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent some time in England, and our son, who was a medical student at that time, came over and lived with us then briefly and did some work over there.
Mm.
So he had that. And Becky was a freshman at the University of the Philippines. She had just graduated from high school. And that was okay for her. And then when we went over to Indonesia, she came also and spent time with us and enjoyed that.
Hmm.
And she went into Asian studies because of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as I ever regretted that, she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the travel part for the kids themselves has been interesting enough, and for me it was fantastic. When would I have ever had a chance to travel?
Maybe.
And I guess that's part of the reason so many non-university people envious. So.
Yes, there's.
I don't mean
potential.
Us. I don't mean the Lantmans
yeah.
in particular, but envy university people. And what they don't know is a lot of university people don't get to do that.
No, or decide. I mean, or choose not to because they do feel it's disruptive.
Yes. Well, nowadays with the women working, the men may want to go, and I hear that. I've heard this several times over. Well, I'd really like to go, but Marge just got her job,
mm-hmm.
and we just can't do that.
Yeah. It's nice to have the flexibility
mm-hmm.
to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I guess I'm just at the age where I don't, I don't see myself changing and moving into the job
mm-hmm.
market, so that I've found all along that flexibility has been it's been a real plus in his job and in our marriage. It's just been a really great thing for us.
Yeah.
And we did have a strong marriage. We do have a strong marriage, so that when we met problems, it was they were easy to handle and deal with.
Mm-hmm.
There are always problems. Any yeah. marriage in any profession has them, and I'm not saying it's all been peaches and cream, but it's been worth it,
mm-hmm.
and we've loved it together. And
I think I'll, that sounds like a good place to maybe to end. Let's add this in.
Well,
so you've collected things
well,
as you've traveled.
Whenever we've traveled, I have my interests seem to be the ones that that make the trip more interesting than his job aspect of it. We couldn't travel except that he would be working. I mean, we never just traveled just for the heck of it, just for the sheer fun of it. But so many good things have come out of it, but mainly it have been my interests that have broadened him and broadened us both. For instance, in England, to go around to the workshops there, the pottery studios and so on, and in Canada, I've done the same thing. When we go to visit my son, I don't just sit at their house. I look up and find ways to find out who the potters are, and I will go around, and he will most often come with me. And music the same way. Well, he wouldn't go to operas unless I had been terribly interested in it. And he's always, he's enjoyed all that stuff now. He can almost talk. He can almost talk it, which is good, because economics can be a very tight subject.
Yeah, it's nice to have other areas that you know something about.
And so I figure I've gained a lot from being a faculty wife, but he's also certainly gained a lot from having a wife with some broader interests.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, I'm really looking forward to retooling again. And I don't do it on any competitive sort of basis. It's strictly hobby. I can sell enough to pay for my clay, but I don't go to shows.
Do you exhibit?
No, I really don't. I've never done that much, but people who know me will come over and say, I've got to go to a wedding, and have you got a casserole?
Really?
Or whatever. And one year my daughter felt the need. She's got two little kids, and she felt the need of doing something. She's very artistic, actually, much more so than I, but she was always doing sculpture, and she said she'd like to come home and have me teach her to use the wheel and do some production type things. So we paid her way and her two children to come home one summer, and it was about 4 years ago actually, and we found a babysitter, and every day the babysitter came, and I took her down in my studio downstairs, and we threw clay on the wheel, and now she's teaching. She can teach pottery, and her own kids. She's just a wonderfully, wonderfully artistic, creative mother. I mean, her own kids are going to be just fantastic artists. They just have had it to offer to them at a very, very young age, and I can see it in their this little girl's drawings, for instance. It's not just clay. I mean, she should have been in art school, is what she should have been, And she worked, incidentally, for a while. She taught school, and now is going back. Her certificate means she can teach K through 12, and she's going to go back and get I guess it's an MA in elementary education out there at the University in Seattle, so that she can teach younger kids. She feels she's most creative at that age, apparently. So I feel like she's gotten a good start. Maybe she's doing what I would have done if I had been younger, or times had been different, or whatnot.
Yeah, my daughter just took a pottery course at the Union.
Oh yeah,
last few weeks. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
She go to West High?
No, my daughter is still at Van Nuys. My son goes to West High
because they have a marvelous pottery teacher there.
Do they really?
Yes.
Oh, that's good.
It's a marvelous department. You know, when I was a kid, there was no art in the schools at all. When I say there was an art teacher that came in once a week, and we were told to draw something.
Yeah.
And I mean, it had none of the creative aspects of drawing to music or whatever they do these days.
Okay,
but
I'd be glad to hear that.
There was nothing at, I shouldn't say there was nothing at West High. I didn't have time for art at West High. I was sort of into Latin. Latin and languages at that point. But I hear now that the studio, as a matter of fact, I went back there for a reunion a couple of years ago, in the reunion of former West End kids, and their studio is fantastic. They've got wheels and kilns and a marvelous teacher.
Oh, gosh, she'll be pleased. I'm pleased to hear about that, too, because she can use a little broadening out.
Some of these neighborhood kids here that knew I did pottery, and they've all been up and seen the wheel and played in the clay a certain amount. One of them was Chris Skornica, and he didn't care for school all that much, but he got really interested in pottery and did very well over at West High. And another one was this Olsen boy, who's just won a Marsha Olson's kids. She's got four boys, and that this Doug Olson has been winning prizes at the high school level. And he says this teacher over here is absolutely top. I don't know the teacher, but there was an article about him in the paper recently.
Mm-hmm.
So they really made a big effort at West High anyway. I don't know about the other high schools to present this to them. Yeah, because there are a lot of turned off kids these days.
Yeah.
And to have a really good art department is got to be a lifesaver.
Yeah, I think so. My son's gotten